It's on.
Wow. Good evening, everybody. Thanks. It's a pleasure and privilege to have Rabbi Yoshua Grunstein back in Stanford. Again, I want to thank Marina, who is the chair of our adult education, for helping shepherd this project, Rabbi Kurtz as well, and Erwin and Mitch for taking Rabbi Grunstein out to dinner. So thank you so much. And always being a good friend, I'll say something personal in a minute, but first your formal introduction. Rabbi Grunstein received rabbinic ordination from the Chief Rabbinate of Israel and holds a BA in education from Herzog College. Formerly the rabbi of Beth Yisrael Synagogue in Halifax, Canada, and formerly director of training and placement at the Strauss Amiel Institute of Oratorio Stone, Rabbi Grunstein currently serves as the director of development of North America at Sohar. And I'd love, actually, if you just spend a few words, maybe that's part of your presentation, what Sohar is, so people can appreciate that. And is part of the founding faculty of the English-speaking Kollel in Efrat. He's an experienced rabbi, mentoring rabbis daily from around the globe, sought-out clergy for life cycle events, writer, and popular lecturer, and he's the author of Daven Your Age, Beyond Routine Musings of a Minyaner, and co-editor of Machzor B'Chai Bahem, and has over 1,000 recorded classes. But most importantly, he's a mensch. He's a good person. He's a dear friend, actually, of the community in Stanford. We've gotten to know you both in Stanford, as well as through Or Torah and in Israel. And on a shul level, we appreciate all the Torah that you offer. You have a lot of fans here. And also on a personal level, we spent some time together and always appreciate your friendship and wisdom. Shem should bless you and your family with much nachas and joy. And it's truly a pleasure to have you back at Agudat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi, very, very much for that eulogy. It was beautiful. The part about being a mensch, I think, was the best compliment I can receive. And I know that Rabbi Cohen is very big on giving compliments to people by ending by saying, after everything, he's also a mensch. So if I meet that, or at least aspire to do that, I feel I'm in good company. So thank you so much, Rabbi, for that introduction. It's really wonderful to be back here. I really don't recall the last time I was here, because ever since COVID, it really blurs. But I love being in this BC age, you know, before COVID versus after COVID, in which we'll be able to see each other without masks. And it's really wonderful to see so many familiar faces and to be back in Stanford. I also want to thank Rabbi Kurtz. I didn't know Rabbi Kurtz until he came to Stanford. And I think because he came to Stanford, I got to know Rabbi Kurtz. And of course, it's been a pleasure to follow him, like many of you, on Facebook, and to also form a relationship with him. And my condolences again to you, Rabbi, on the loss of your Rebbe this year. God willing, I hope that you'll be able to continue his teachings for many more years in health and happiness as well. I began to volunteer at Sohar when I came back to Israel from Halifax in 2007. And the reason I did it was because I was very concerned about the future of the Jewish people in Israel. Because unlike outside of Israel, there was something about Israel that's very unique. And that is that Israelis and Judaism don't always walk together. Many of you have visited Israel. Many of you know it's a Jewish country. Many of you know that the weekends that we look forward to are not Memorial Day weekends, not President's Day weekend, but rather if Shavuos happens to come out on Sunday, then we have a long weekend because Shabbos is a day off. Sunday is Erev Shavuos, which is half a day off. And Monday is a day off because of Shavuos. In other words, the country is Jewish. The days off are the holidays of the Jewish people, the Yomim Tovim. Not to mention the fact that if you want to eat not kosher in Israel, it's very difficult because it's almost impossible to find. However, if you ask a typical Israeli, be it an Israeli student in a high school or an Israeli secular citizen that you meet on a plane, are you Jewish or are you Israeli? Or to be more precise, tell me what percentage of you is Jewish and what percentage of your lifestyle is Israeli. The answer is inevitably going to be, I am Israeli, I am not Jewish. Well, I'm a little Jewish, but I'm Israeli. And that concerned me greatly when I got back to Israel in 2007. It was something I did not deal with outside of Israel. I met people that were a little Jewish, affiliated, non-affiliated, but I never had that they feel Israeli, but not Jewish. And indeed, that's one of the reasons that I volunteered to do weddings for this organization called Tzohar. Because when Tzohar was founded, they were as concerned about the fact that there's this, some sort of a rift between Israelis and Judaism. And indeed, right after Rabin's assassination in 1995, they started to officiate at weddings for non-religious by putting forth three conditions to the rabbis. Number one, the rabbi has to meet the couple prior to the wedding, something that most Israeli rabbis don't do, because you're assigned a rabbi from the rabbinate. The rabbi comes to your chuppah, does the mumble-jumble under the chuppah, and leaves. No, you have to meet the couple. Number two, you have to show up to the wedding on time and dress properly. And number three, you can't take a cent for your services. Travel arrangements, fine, but no money for your services. That's how Tzohar began. And thousands of Israelis have been married by Tzohar, Jewishly and in accordance with all the dictates of the rabbinate, ever since 1995. And as you all know, Israel is a place where things are exciting. And things always develop every single day. And one of them is the topic this evening. What Tzohar is trying to do in Israel is to tell Israelis that are secular, Judaism belongs to you as well. It doesn't just belong to those that are called religious, it belongs to you as well. How much it should belong to you, you're going to have to make a decision. There's freedom of choice in Judaism. We're there to inspire and influence. But Judaism does not only belong to the religious of Israel. And we're hoping that through our many efforts, we'll be able to see a reunion between Israelis and Judaism. And this evening I want to deal with one issue that the rabbi asked me to speak about, and that is the recent conversion bill that's now on the table, or not on the table, in Israel. I'm sure you're following what's happening with the coalition in Israel, and you know very well that to pass laws right now is almost impossible. That can change tomorrow, but I'm saying this evening, that's where it seems. However, there is a conversion bill on the table. And the conversion bill is on the table for the following reason. If you look on the source sheet on the top, the reason is as follows. The motivation behind the legislation, quoting from the Jerusalem Post article about it, is to convert a large number of Israeli citizens who are Jewish ancestry but not Jewish. Why? To avoid mass interfaith marriages in the Jewish state. Now, those that deal with conversion know that there's a big difference between assimilation and intermarriage. You can have a couple that she or he is not Jewish, but they are not assimilated. As a matter of fact, they may even be members of a synagogue. They have Friday night dinners. They happen to be a Jew and a non-Jew that are intermarried. However, assimilation means you're assimilating out of the Jewish people. You're not a member of a synagogue for sure, and you barely keep any of the laws of Judaism. In Israel, as I just presented, you have Israelis that their days off are the Yom Tovim. Their day off weekly is Shabbos. They eat kosher food. In general, they're leading a lifestyle that I would call, at least culturally, Jewish. However, they're not Jewish. Why? Because we have something in Israel called the Law of Return. Have you heard of it? The Law of Return says that you can come and become a citizen of Israel if you're Jewish, Jewish mother. Or, if you converted, we'll leave that out for now. Or, if you have a Jewish father or grandfather. It was done as an anti-Nuremberg law when it was enacted. For better or for worse, that law is now law in Israel. So therefore, in 1990-91, the Soviet Union fell. Many, many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands of refusnikim, namely Russians who were refused to leave the country, could leave. Thousands came to Israel. And today we face a situation where we have 400,000 Israeli citizens at least who are not halachically Jewish but are 100% Israeli. Namely, they live in Israel, they speak Hebrew, they are as Israeli as my kids. Albeit, they're not Jewish because they are Israelis that came to Israel under the Law of Return. And these are the people that are living in Israel. So this evening I want to deal with, how are we going to deal with that? I don't want to deal with conversion in America. When Rabbi Cohn, together with Rabbi Kurtz, invites a conversion expert from America, he'll deal with America. I don't think as an Israeli rabbi I have a right to tell American rabbis what to do. I never thought that. The rabbi mentioned I mentor rabbis. I never tell them what to do because at the end of the day they live here and they know what the needs are here. Tonight I'm dealing with conversion in Israel. Because in Israel, we have a unique problem that I don't think you have here. And I'm going to be very blunt because in Stanford, I feel at home. So I'm going to be blunt. If tomorrow morning we find out that outside of this community and the big Jewish communities of the tri-state area, everyone's assimilated. I mean, the conservative, reform, reconstructionist, post-denominational, in-denominational, everyone has assimilated out. There's not one Jew left. Does it affect you? Personally, I don't think so. And I'll tell you why. Because your kids, hopefully, will be going still to Jewish institutions. They'll be going to college campuses with a lot of Jews. Hopefully, they'll marry a Jew. And therefore, it doesn't really affect you on a day-to-day level. Your synagogue and you are, at this moment, I'm not talking about future generations, right now, you're okay. However, if that same situation happens in Israel, this is what's going to happen. My daughter goes to school. In her class, there's a girl that's as Israeli as her, speaks Hebrew as her, went to school with her since she was in grade one. Bat mitzvah came. No one checked Judaism at bat mitzvah. You have a party. So for a party, you don't need to check if someone's Jewish. Eventually, that person gets to the age of 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, wants to get married. We find out she's not Jewish because only her father's Jewish and not her mother. The difference is she's intertwined into Israeli society. She serves with you in the army. She went to school with you. She lives next door to you. And this came home to me from that daughter one day when she comes home from school around 16 years old and says, Abba, what happens when a girl goes to mikveh? How do the three rabbis see the mikveh? So I explain, a beis din needs to be there, albeit the woman goes in, at least in Israel, with a robe on and doesn't go in and goes into the mikveh totally dressed. And the rabbis are in the room and obviously witness it. Obviously she has the robe on. Oh, okay. Anything else done? And I start telling her what Kabbalat Mitzvot is, acceptance of Mitzvot in the mikvah. And then I said, but why are you asking? She says, well, I have a girl in my class that has to go through conversion. I said, really? A girl that just came? No, she's been with me all these years. My daughter came back to Israel when she was going into Gan. She was 3 years old. This girl has been with her since she was 3 years old. Same education. Living in the same religious town we both live in. And one day she finds out she's not really Jewish. Now that was an open and shut case, right? She's anyway religious. She anyway keeps mitzvot. Open and shut case. Now take that same case to a Russian or a Ukrainian that came to Israel, not Jewish, but her father's Jewish. She has Jewish blood, or I'd like to put it, they're part of the Jewish family, but they're not Jewish. They're intertwined into Israeli society. These people are not only intertwined into Israeli society, they're the future of Israel. I don't know if you remember Israel before the Russians came. It was a primitive Israel. When I came to Israel in 1988, we didn't have a phone for 6 months. They told us, stay at home from September to August. One day we're going to come and we're going to install your phone. You think I'm joking? You're laughing? That's exactly what happened. One day, knock on the door. Hi, Bezek. Only company then in Israel that's installed phones. We're here. It was March. I remember the date. It was a big day. We had a phone all of a sudden after 6 months. The Russians and the Ukrainians and everyone from the former Soviet Union brought up the country's level. Wow. They did wonderful things for Israel. If Israel is ahead in high tech and many other industries, it's mainly because of that Aliyah of 1990, 91, 92. However, with every Aliyah comes challenges, and this is the challenge we're going to deal with this evening. They're intertwined. They're 400,000 and not just a few. How do we deal with it? In order to deal with it, indeed, we have to establish one thing. A, not everyone is going to become a Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Torah, or Mitzvot Jew, even if they go through a conversion course. That's amazing. Namely, they come to a place like Tzohar, we smile, we're absolutely wonderful, we're good people, we'll work with them. Despite it all, not everyone's going to become Shomer Shabbos. Not every Jew that I ever met in my life met me, and instantaneously that night said, I'm becoming Shomer Shabbos. Maybe Rabbi Kurtz, you have that. I don't know. But Rabbi Cohen, I don't know. But me, it didn't happen. I met many secular Israelis in my life. I did weddings for them. I got thank yous. Wow. And I even got donations for Tzohar. They were so happy with my services. And they still didn't become Shomer Shabbos. And indeed, this is not a new problem. This is an old problem. If you look at the second source on the page, Masechet Yevamot, Daf Mem Zayin Amud Bet, the Gemara says as follows: Amar Rav Chelbo, Kashim Gerim LeYisrael KeSapachat. Converts are very difficult for the Jewish people, like leprosy on the skin. Very interestingly, I don't know why, in the Schottenstein Art Scroll Gemara, they translate this line, but they leave the word sapachat in. They translate everything into English. Said Rabbi Chelbo, the converts are very difficult for the Jewish people, like a sapachat. I don't know why they didn't say leprosy. Maybe because, indeed, it's not necessarily leprosy in the Torah when we talk about tzaraat. In any case, it's like a skin disease. Namely, it's like a thorn in the Jewish people. Why? Machloket Rashi and Tosfot. Rashi on the right side on the page says very simply, Shochazim b'maaseihem arishonim. Many of these converts, when they're converting, they're gung-ho about Judaism. They love Shabbos, they love Yontif, they even love fasting on Yom Kippur. It's a spiritual experience. Well, for every high, as you all know, comes a low, right? For every wedding day that a couple goes through, eventually they come home, and someone says to the other, throw out the garbage. Did you do the laundry? Did you do the ironing? Did you wash the clothing? Did you clean the bathroom? So for every high comes a low, says Rashi, Shochazim imasehem arishonim. Elomdim Yisrael mihem osumchim alehem b'isavahetar. What happens is, many of them go back to becoming non-religious in their practices. They no longer keep Shabbos, they no longer keep Yontif. And the Jewish people start saying, well, they're converts, so they must know what they're doing. We'll do like them. For example, maybe they eat out in restaurants they shouldn't eat out in. And we'll say, well, if they're eating there, we can eat there. And that's the way the Rambam learns this Gemara. Tosfos says exactly the opposite. What does Tosfos say? How come the Jewish people have converts that are like a thorn in the society of Jewish people? Look at the Tosfot. Says Tosfot, in the name of Rav Avraham Ger. You understand if his name is Rav Avraham Ger, he's not going to speak against the converts. Says Rav Avraham Ger, I'll tell you why. I'm a good convert. Lefisha gerim bekiin b'mitzvot. How many of you have been hosted by, excuse me for being blunt, an FFB versus a BT on a Friday night? An FFB, Friday night in the summer. Oh, it's so late. Oh, let's do the Shalom Aleichem thing. We got to get to the meal. We're hungry. What does a BT do? Welcome to our home. It's Shabbos. Thank God. Wow. Says Tosfos. You ever see a Jew who's from birth? They're not excited about Judaism. Many of them break the laws. Ah, convert! They're careful. They're so careful because were not born into it. They accepted it voluntarily. Says the Tosfot, why are they like a thorn? Because they make us look bad. Look at the convert. They're so careful. They don't speak Lashon Hara. And we joke about people that speak Lashon Hara. I remember once in Efrat, my word of honor, after Mincha at 1:30 in the shopping center. That, I think, only happens in Efrat, right? In Israel, you have minchas in shopping centers. 1:30 mincha shopping center. Someone wants to teach a little halacha. Takes out a pamphlet, Shmirat HaLashon of the Chafetz Chaim. Start teaching us not to speak Lashon Hara. Reads the first halacha. One of my rabbein from yeshiva, I won't say who, whispers into my ear. And I quote, who did this guy think he is to teach me not to say Lashon Hara? You ever think a convert would say that? A convert would say, Lashon Hara, let's learn it. We have to see. So says Tosfot, you know why they're like a thorn? They make the frum from birth look bad. Rashi, opposite. They go back to their old ways. They're bad for the Jewish people. We're filling in ranks with people that are not authentic. Ladies and gentlemen, the machloket Rashi and Tosfot happens today. You know many converts. Some of them are amazing assets to the Jewish people. Some of them were phonies and are the opposite of assets to the Jewish people. So, therefore, I entitled this particular talk, Conversion, Chances and Challenges. Namely, there is a chance and an opportunity. There's also challenges and problems that come along with it. So let's see, and I'd like to divide my words into two, and that's all you have to remember this evening. Adults versus children. Above Bar Bat Mitzvah, under Bar Bat Mitzvah. Above Bar Bat Mitzvah, we have a very big problem. And that is the following. not every person in Israel who's even willing to convert, again, they're willing to come to a Beis Din, they're willing to convert, of these 400,000 who feel Israeli and not Jewish, but they're willing to convert, not everyone's willing to become Shomrei Torah or Mitzvot. Can you convert an adult when the adult tells you, well, all in all, I like the Jewish people. Kosher food, no brainer. Israel has kosher food. You know what? I'll even keep meat and milk in the house. No brainer. But the Shabbos thing, no. Yom Tov, no. Not eating all Yom Kippur, no. Do you convert them or not? Answer, Mefurash Gemara. Here you can't go any way you want. The Gemara in Bechoros, Daf Lamed Amud Bet, says, Ovdei kochavim shebalekabel divrei Torah, chutz midavar echad. The convert comes and says, I love all the 612 mitzvot. I have a problem with one. One mitzvah I don't want to accept. What's the halacha? Ein mekablinoto. Now, just you think that this is in biblical commandments, the Gemara is quick to point out, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu diktuk echad midivrei sofrim. If he says, I'm willing to accept all the 613 mitzvot, but not Eruv Tafshilin, because that's a rabbinic thing. Not going to do Eruv Tafshilin. Even then, you don't accept him. And this is paskened in the Shulchan Aruch very explicitly, where the Shulchan Aruch says that when, let's say, a male converts, he needs to do a Brit Milah, and he needs to go to Mikvah, and he needs to accept upon himself mitzvot. Says the Shulchan Aruch, all the above, if you didn't do it, he can still be a convert except for one thing. Chutz mikabalat ha-mitzvot shema'akevet iminat bayom uvishlosha. Says the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, that quite frankly, you can convert anyone you want. If you forgot to do a Brit Milah, you can fill it in later. But if there wasn't kabalat mitzvot during the day, because a Beis Din only has a right to come together during the day, and the Beis Din has to be a minimum of three, if that didn't happen, he's not a convert, she's not a convert. So it seems very explicit that if indeed an adult comes to you and says, honestly, I'm not going to keep all the mitzvot after I convert. I don't believe in Eruv Tafshilin. I don't believe in clapping Hoshanot on Hoshana Rabbah. It seems to me very primitive. You can't accept them into the Jewish people. That's what it seems. However, in the poskim, we have three schools of thought on this. And I have to be honest, and then I'll take your question in the back there. And that is the following. The first school of thought says, even though the Shulchan Aruch said what he said, it's really not me'akev. And the one that stands behind this is Rabbi Uziel. Rabbi Uziel was the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, a great, great, great Talmud Chacham. Not that I have to give him, I hate to say that because it's like I'm giving him my honest-to-goodness mark. I don't think I decide who's a Talmud Chacham. He was the chief rabbi of Israel. He wrote Endless Responsum, and he basically says that if a person comes and says that he's not going to accept mitzvot, it's not ma'akev in his giyur. He can still become a Jew because he loves the Jewish people, because lechatchila he should accept all the mitzvot. Aval b'diyeved, I quote his words, im lohu diyu ino ma'akev. The only thing that's ma'akev is that in the mikvah you do this razzle-dazzle ceremony where you say, do you accept upon yourself the mitzvot from the Torah, the mitzvot from the rabbis, and the good customs of the Jewish people? Do you accept upon yourself reward and punishment? Do you believe in one God and not in a trinity? Those are the five things you say to a convert when they're in the mikvah with the water up to their neck. That's what you say. Says Rav Uziel, you should do that and they should accept. But if not, they're still converts. They're still part of the Jewish people. That's the first opinion, that even though the Shulchan Aruch said what he said, and even though the Gemara and Becharot said, if you accept everything except for one, you're not a convert. Rav Uziel has this razzle-dazzle chiddush that says that it's not ma'akev b'diyevet. And what's b'diyevet? B'diyevet means post-facto. We have 400,000 Israelis in Israel that are presumed to be Jewish. That's b'diyevet. That situation is b'diyevet. We have to solve it. That's the way to solve it. Convert them. But, quite frankly, no one's expecting them to keep mitzvot. You tell them about the mitzvot. That is ma'akev, but they don't have to accept upon themselves. That opinion has not been widely accepted, because it seems a little strange based on these two sources. The second opinion has been widely more accepted, and that's Rav Chaim Oizer Grzynski. Does everyone know the name, first of all? Rav Chaim Oizer Grzynski was like, I would say, it's hard for me to give an equivalent in the year 2022. But let's just say that in Lithuania of pre-World War II, pre the Shoah, he died in 1940 or 41, I forget, from cancer. He was actually brought to a proper Jewish grave and burial. He was like the chief rabbi of Lithuania, the posek of Lithuania, and the religious leader of Lithuania. Okay? In 1939, when the Shoah broke out, all the yeshivas piled into Vilna because they said, if Rav Chaim Moiser is there, he'll take care of us. So that's Rav Chaim Moiser Grushinsky. Rav Chaim Moiser Grushinsky has a very, in my opinion, logical point of view on this issue. Because Rav Chaim Moiser Grushinsky knows very well that there's many converts, even before the Shoah, that ultimately accepted everything they're supposed to accept in the Beis Din, and yet didn't keep mitzvot after they converted. So he said there's a big difference between Kabbalat mitzvot and Kiyum mitzvot. What's Kabbalat mitzvot? Kabbalat mitzvot means as follows. Remember you got your license at the DMV? Okay, I don't know how many of you remember it. I was an adult that already had a license. I had to go through it again. So I felt I went through conversion. I always say that was my conversion. Because see, I moved from Israel to Canada to be a rabbi there. When you move from Israel to Canada, you have to get your license again because you can't use your Israeli license forever. You can be an Israeli for a few months, but eventually it runs out. So the written test wasn't a big deal. After you went through ordination tests, the written test for getting a license is not exactly the hardest thing to do. But the actual test in the car, I think. Why? Because there's different laws in Canada than in Israel. For example, where I lived in Canada, if you see a pedestrian, you stop. Middle of the highway, the pedestrian, you stop. In Israel, you see a pedestrian in the middle of the highway, you run them over and you tell them, why did you walk in the middle of the highway? So I didn't know that. So I saw pedestrians trying to cross, not at a crossway, and I didn't stop for them. So I failed my first test. So, oh my gosh, I went in and I checked all the laws and then I accepted upon myself all the laws of driving in Canada and I actually fulfilled it and they gave me a license. And I still have my Canadian license. Well, that's very nice. A convert comes to convert to Judaism. Imagine if they come to the DMV and they say, I don't accept upon myself the laws that govern driving in America. Would they give them a license? No. Now, what would happen if they come and they say, I accept upon myself all the laws of driving in America? Stopping at a red light, slowing down when it's a yellow light, everything. However, then they ask him a second question. Will you always drive the speed limit? If the person says, I accept upon myself that if I don't drive the speed limit, I'll get a ticket and I'll have to pay it. Do you give him a license or not? Rav Chaim Moshe Grushinsky says, that's exactly the situation here. If the convert comes and says, I don't accept upon myself the mitzvot, you don't convert them, you throw them out. But if they say, I accept the mitzvot, and I accept voluntarily the penalty, the punishment for not doing mitzvot or for doing averot, then they're accepting to be a Jew. Afterwards, they go ahead and they don't do it, like any person who gets a license, accepts upon themselves all the laws, but violates them, they get a ticket, they have to pay. God will punish you because you accepted upon yourself the mitzvah. By the way, what's the corollary of that? Before they converted, if they drove on Shabbos, there was nothing wrong with it. They're non-Jewish. They didn't accept upon themselves not to drive on Shabbos. But once they accepted it and they drove on Shabbos, they're going to accept the penalty for it. Now that makes perfect sense. The Gemara in Becharos is talking about someone who won't accept the laws, won't accept the driving laws. He's accepting it, albeit, like many of us, afterwards we fracture certain laws. But if we do, and they catch us, we usually don't argue. We did something wrong, we have to pay. I got a ticket in Israel recently for speeding. Nothing I could say about it. I sped. I have to pay the ticket. That's what Rav Chaim Moshe Grushinsky says, and therefore, today, there are rabbis that say, we have to just tell converts, there's 613 commandments, there's many rabbinic commandments, there's many customs, you have to accept upon yourself all of it. And if you don't do it, you're going to get punished. You accept or not? They say yes, you can convert them. The fact that afterwards they're not going to keep it, like many of us who drive and don't keep the speed limit, that's their business between them and God. Nothing to do with accepting them into the Jewish people. They have to accept it, not necessarily fulfill it afterwards. But I have to admit, these two opinions are very, very rare. Batei Din around the world and in Israel do not accept these two opinions. For adults, they basically go with what Moshe Feinstein says in a tshuva, even though he tries to, and I have to admit, this shows what a gadol Rav Moshe Feinstein is, he tries to justify the other Batei Din. Rav Moshe Feinstein's point of view is you have to accept the mitzvot and fulfill the mitzvot. And if you don't have both acceptance and fulfillment, you're not able to convert. And even though, again, he tries to understand Rav Chaim Oizer and the Batei Din that follow him, he himself says very explicitly, Kabbalat mitzvot ma'akev v'gerut v'lachen be'etzem yesh v'pakpek ala gerut sheyesh rabbanim shemekablin. I don't understand these Batei Din. Ha'aran sahadeh, in many cases, I know for sure, she'ein mekablot mitzvot k'dochiach b'sofan. We know very well that this particular convert that's coming is just telling the rabbis what they want to hear. But quite frankly, we know they're not going to keep mitzvot, and therefore he doesn't understand how they convert them. So with regard to the adults that come into Israel today, the 400,000 Russians, I really don't think we have a solution. The only solution is for them to accept mitzvot and fulfill the mitzvot. Because the majority of rabbis around the world have accepted Rav Moshe Feinstein against the two other points of view. Namely, if you're an adult, in order to convert to Judaism, you have to A, accept upon yourself voluntarily all the mitzvot, and B, there has to be at least a probability, a high one, that you're going to fulfill it. And if you could see here on the bottom, Asrot Rabbanim Srugim B'Tguval Rav Eliezer Melamed, Rabbi Kurtz, I think the last time you heard me, I spoke about Rav Melamed, if you were on that Zoom. Rav Melamed is one of the primary poskim today in Israel. He is part of the what we call the religious Zionist community. He's being viciously attacked for many things recently. One of them is, he says you can convert people if they say we want to keep a traditional Jewish lifestyle, not necessarily a fully religious one. Every rabbi I know has attacked him on that. Even though they love him, they love his svarim, they respect him on that level, they attacked him and they say you cannot convert adults unless you have acceptance of mitzvot and fulfillment of mitzvot. That's the halachic issue. However, there's a practical issue involved. And this is what the chairman of Tzohar, Rav David Stav, said in that same Jerusalem Post article that he published. 90% of the converts that convert, according to many surveys, do not keep mitzvot the day after their conversion. In other words, they go to a Beit Din that goes like Rav Moshe Feinstein. You need fulfillment and you need acceptance. First acceptance and then fulfillment. However, 90%, he says, of the converts, based on service of the chief rabbinate, do not continue to be observant just days after their conversion, despite their unfortunately fictitious declarations to the contrary at the time of conversion. In other words, I have a practical problem beyond the halakhic one. They go to a Beit Din that says you need to accept mitzvot and fulfill mitzvot. So what do? They're not stupid. What do? You ever hear the term, you tell the rabbis what he wants to hear? That's what they do. I'll tell you honestly, I saw it with my own two eyes. You ever hear of Cliff Notes? Remember in school when you didn't want to actually read the book, you had Cliff Notes? Converts today, via phones, pass each other Cliff Notes. This is what you have to tell the rabbi, because this is what he wants to hear. When you come to the base and they ask you about Shabbos, this is the answer you should answer. When he asks you, do you really believe in God? This is the answer you should answer. They tell the rabbis what they want to hear. A day after conversion, 90% of them don't continue to do one word of what they said they're going to do. So what's the entrance of potential Jews from the former Soviet Union into Judaism? What's the first lesson they're taught? First lesson, welcome to Judaism. What's the first lesson? How to lie. It's the most craziest and terrible thing. How to lie. Now I have to tell you, I know many, many of these Israelis from the former Soviet Union. They're very blunt, if you met them. And they're also very honest. They don't want to lie. If they're going to keep mitzvot, they'll tell the Beis Din. And if not, they don't want to lie. It's a terrible thing that their entrance into Judaism is lying. So with regard to adults, unless you find a select few that will keep mitzvot after their conversion, it's hard for me to see how we can convert them. That's with regard to adults above bar bat mitzvah age. It's very hard for me to see it on a halachic level, but it's also hard for me to see it on a practical level because they're basically telling the rabbis what they want to hear, and an entrance into Judaism by virtue of lying is not the way to convert to Judaism. That's with regard to adults. You had a question before I get to kids.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to say the opposite with regard to kids in a minute.
It seems to me as though you have two people who want to convert. One of them says, I can't accept everything except Eruv Tashlim. And he's told no, can't. And then there's the other person who says, yes, I will accept everything. 5 minutes out of the Beis Din commits all the violations of mitzvah that he can possibly do. And only said yes because they wanted to marry somebody who's Jewish. So I think the first one is more honest.
You're right.
More realistic if somebody says I will accept and seems to know, but Eruv Tashlim is
a... I'm going to buttress your point of view. Your name?
Phyllis.
It's their God-given right to remain a non-Jew. God-given right. And therefore, I think that if they're honest, that's the way to go. Thank you for your honest to goodness opinion. It's your God-given right to continue to be a righteous Gentile, keep the 7 Noahide commandments, and that's all you need to do. And I think it's far better than coming to the Beis Din and lying and telling the rabbis what they want to hear. Yes. No, it actually does, and I'll explain. If I wasn't clear, then it's my fault. Basically, you come to the Beis Din, and after learning a little bit about Judaism, you say, I accept everything. Most of it I don't know yet, but I accept it. And I'm going to fulfill it. Are we going to goof up? Of course I'm going to goof up, because A, I don't know everything yet. And B, even when I know it, sometimes I goof up. I heard a story today that a gentleman came to shul, put on his tefillin on his hand, started to talk to someone next to him. That's forbidden, to talk between the tefillin on your hand and on your head. And forgot to put his tefillin on his head. The whole davening, he went by. He forgot it. Just forgot about it that day. He goofed up. But does he accept upon himself to put on tefillin? Yes. Did one day not work out? 100%. So that's 100% part of it. Personal growth is a lifelong aspiration. And all of us are part of it. Converts, Jews from birth, every one of us. But at the time of conversion, you say, I'm willing to put myself into a lifestyle of personal growth. No one's obligating you to do that if you're not Jewish. Yes?
You brought an example of analogy with EMV. So what if I bring an analogy with INS, which is the immigration services? You want to convert to become an American. Great. But they're going to check on you. They're going to interview you. They might even come to your house. So if there was something similar, a rabbi would come to your house. There was a particular rabbi who is leading your conversion, and I don't know exactly much about that process because I am Jewish. But, you know...
I'm going to answer your question.
I'm
going to answer your question, and you're 100% correct. There is part of the conversion process in many different situations, in many batei din, is everything you just said. Like the immigration services, including coming to their house, including them showing the rabbi in their house how they kosher the kitchen, how they have separate meat and milk. But you should know something. That too could be just showing the rabbi what he wants to see. Because it's very easy, especially in Israel, to perform that. We all know that halachically you can manage with even one sink in your house. You don't need two sinks. Two sets of dishes, many people have. And therefore, I don't know if it's going to solve the issue, because at the end of the day, you can put on any show you want to put on, tell the rabbis anything you want. Do you want to convert to Judaism and fulfill the mitzvah? That's what it comes down to. If you do, the checks, what you say, will be of little significance. Yes?
So, I was always under the impression that it's so hard trying to make things a little more liberal.
Yes. Now we're getting to it.
Sohar
tries to make things easier for secular Israelis. When they register for marriage, when they want to prove their Judaism, we have a whole department called Shorashim, which basically takes every one of those people that came from the FSSU and says to them, you don't have documents to prove you're Jewish. We're going to help you get it. We're going to send investigators to the former KGB archives we're going to do it, and for no money. That's why, indeed, part of my job is fundraising, because we don't take money for that. Even during the war in Ukraine, that's what we did. So we make things easier for many people. But when it comes to halacha, when it comes to Jewish law, and you can't change Jewish law, I don't think we should change Jewish law, even if there's an opinion out there that seems, and it's a legitimate opinion, but it's not an accepted opinion. But with regard to kids, and now we're coming to making it easier, I think that not only accepted opinion, it's the pshat of the Gemara. If the Gemara said about adults, if a person comes and says, I accept all the mitzvah except for one, you can't convert them, what does it say about kids under bar mitzvah? A kid under bar mitzvah comes to shul here, tells the president, I pledge $1 million to the shul. You believe them? The kid says crazy things. Right? Well, the Gemara says, how does a kid under bar mitzvah convert? After all, they can't make a declaration, I accept mitzvot. It means nothing. The Gemara says in Ksubos, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, the other side of the page, Ger Katan, Matpilin Oto Dad Beistin. The Beistin takes responsibility. And then the Gemara says, how does it work? The Gemara says, with regard to adults, you need a declaration, because maybe they'll go back to their old ways. You know, Rosh Hashanah is beautiful. Yom Kippur, they'll get through. It's just one day. Sukkis, man simchatenu, gorgeous. Then they come to December. Ladies and gentlemen, is the Christmas tree any sort of a competition against our little tiny menorah? I mean, the Christmas tree looks nicer than the menorah. So by December, they're back to their old ways. Not so, says the Gemara, with regard to kids. With regard to kids on the bar bat mitzvah, the Gemara says, and I quote, Katan schut hulo. It's a schut. It's a privilege for a kid under bar bat mitzvah to be a Jew. What does that mean, it's a privilege? What does that mean? One school of thought, on the left side of the page, I should have put this on the right side of the page, because you'll say this is the right wing point of view. Okay, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, Rav Yechiel Weinberg, by the way, Rav Yechiel Weinberg, a very free thinker, the Sri Deyesh, they both say, yeah, of course it's a privilege. You know, it's a privilege to a kid to be Jewish when their parents are Orthodox. Then it's a privilege for them to also be Jewish because they're living in a home that keeps Shabbos and Yontif and whatnot, okay? It's a home where they eat blintzes on Shavuot, so of course it's a home for him to be a privilege to be Jewish. So we'll make him Jewish. But if the parents are not Orthodox, the parents are not Shomer Shabbos, then it's not a privilege. I'll tell you what's going to happen. The Beis Din's going to convert them without Kabbalat Mitzvot. As I said, their declarations means nothing at 10. By the time they're 14, what's going to happen? They're living in a house that doesn't keep Shabbos, doesn't keep Yontif, doesn't keep anything. Well, keeps Christmas maybe. They're going to sin and sin and sin. Why is what they're doing now called a sin and not called just an act? Why is it when they get in the car on Shabbos it's called a sin and not just driving on Shabbos permissibly? Who made that happen? The Beis Din! They're the ones that converted him. Who told you to convert them? Didn't you know the parents are not Shomer Shabbos? If the parents are Shomer Shabbos, it's a privilege for them to be Jewish. And if not, you're dooming it for them. Because they're going to drive on Shabbos for sure. Who made it forbidden? You, the Beis Din. So that's the first point of view. It's only a schut if the parents are Shomer Shabbos. The second point of view of Chaim Moisek Grzynski that I quoted earlier, the one that said there's a difference between fulfillment of mitzvot and acceptance, the DMV idea, he says that, indeed, it's not a good idea to permit converting these kids, but it's always a privilege to be Jewish, regardless of the parents being Shomer Shabbos. The third point of view is that, indeed, it's a privilege for him to be Jewish. If at 13, he decides to continue being Jewish. But if he wants to revoke it, then it's no longer a privilege. You have to tell him about it, and he has to agree. Now here comes the biggest surprise of them all. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the one that said you can't convert anyone, any adult above the age of 13 unless he accepts and fulfills. You know what he says about this? You ready for this? This was like, I read this for the first time, I didn't believe it was the same author. Because I knew what Rav Moshe Feinstein said about conversion of adults. He comes to children, and he got the following question. There's a Rebbe in a school. Let's say your local, what's the name of your local school? Bicultural, right, I forgot. Bicultural, a Rebbe comes to Rabbi Cohen and says, listen, I'm teaching in a class. There's a few non-Jews in the class. Am I allowed to teach them Torah? There's a prohibition on the books of teaching non-Jews Torah. But Moshe Feinstein gets this question. And he answers the following answer. You know, there's many a terim to teach non-Jews Torah, whatever they might be. Written Torah, not oral Torah. Parts of oral Torah, not all of it. But why go into that? I have a very good idea for you. What's the idea? Convert the kids. They're all under bar bat mitzvah. One day you do a class trip to the mikveh. Okay? Everyone gets a class trip, and then we're going to show you how we use the mikveh. Get three rabbis in the room. You take all the kids that are non-Jewish. You throw them in the mikveh, and you take them out. The Beis Din, they don't have to say anything. They're converted. Wait. The parents are not Shomer Shabbos? Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it makes no difference. Why? For two reasons. Number one, they have good teachers. Bicultural has good teachers. They're going to influence these kids to become Shomer Shabbos. And I quote, Milomdim bebeit sefer datiyot zemorim yirei shamayim harei matzoi sheyit gadluyot Shomer Torah. There's a good educational tapestry around them. Taking this to Israel, there's a Jewish country around them. And number two, let's say the teachers are not successful and the kids will not become Shomrei Shabbos even though they're learning in a Jewish school because their parents are not Shomrei Shabbos. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's still a privilege. Why? That a Jew that does Averos is on a higher level than a non-Jew. Namely, what does Rav Moshe Feinstein say? It's always a privilege to be a Jew, regardless of your lifestyle. A religious lifestyle or a non-religious lifestyle. So the same Rav Moshe Feinstein that said not to convert adults because they will not fulfill the mitzvah that they accepted upon themselves, says with regard to kids under bar bat mitzvah, you don't need it. And it's always a privilege to be a Jew. Not to mention the fact that the tapestry around these kids is a religious one because they're in a Jewish school. They're in a parochial school. They're in a day school. Taking that to Israel, they're not only in a Jewish school in Israel with Jews, even if it is a non-religious school. They're in a Jewish country. The food they eat is kosher food because it's hard to find non-kosher food. It's better than a Jewish school because in America, in a Jewish school, once you leave the Jewish school, you're in a non-Jewish country. In Israel, it's even better. So says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you can convert these kids because the pshat in the Gemara is it's always a privilege to be a Jew. You know who agrees with him of all things, of all people? Rav Yoshev. Have you heard that name before? Rav Yoshev agrees with Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Kovetz Tshuvo. Deschut vechova, he says, talui ba'avanat hazocheh, velo bezeshu be'emet zchut. Says Rav Yoshev, when the Gemara says it's a privilege to be a Jew, privilege to who? If you want to go ahead and judge it by Jewish standards, it's not a privilege. He has non-Shomer Shabbos parents. He's probably not going to become Shomer Shabbos. He's not going to be a Mekayim Mitzvot. But if you judge it by him it's better to be Jewish. Imagine, in Israel, he's in Israel. It's better for him to be Jewish because he'll get all the rights as a Jew. He'll be able to marry in Israel civilly and Jewishly. From his perspective, he has everything to gain and nothing to lose. Meaning you don't judge it by Jewish standards. You judge it by the standard of the convert himself. I'll say it another way. You know the story of the little boy that takes the soup on the Friday night and starts eating it and goes, hey, it's hot. And his father gets very mad at him and calls him an apikoiris. Why? Because the soup was put in a kli shlishi, so it's not supposed to be hot. How dare he say the soup was hot? Yes, Jewishly, halachically, the kli shlishi, namely, you take the soup out, your chicken soup out with a ladle. Ladle's called kli sheni. Then you put it into a bowl, it's called kli shlishi, right? It's not supposed to be as hot as the pot. Practically, it may still be hot, right? So, do you judge it by Jewish standards or by practical standards? Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, says Rav Yashiv. Zchut means, for him, it's a privilege. He thinks it's a privilege. Jewishly, it's not a privilege. He may be a sinner. But personally, it is. So with regard to kids, Sohar suggests, based on the conversion bill, let's empower rabbis of cities to do conversions. Because at this moment in Israel, the chief rabbinate courts will not convert children unless their parents are Shomrei Shabbos, which means of that 400,000 of the former Soviet Union, the number's going to go up because of what's happening now in the Ukraine and Russia. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but there's more Olim from Russia than there is from Ukraine. Do you know why? Because of the sanctions that they're putting upon Russia. It's not easy to live there right now. certain places of Ukraine that not being bombed, it's okay to live there. Russia has no support financially, so people are leaving. In any case, these people, with regard to adults, as I said, big challenge. With regard to kids, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, convert the kids. Convert the kids because it's always a privilege to be Jewish. What's privilege? The Gemara says it's a privilege to be a Jew. Rav Elyashiv, it's a privilege from their perspective, because in Israel they have everything to gain and nothing to lose. So where do we go on this? We would like to empower rabbis of cities to do conversions in Israel. That's the conversion law on the table. Because we believe that if that happens, there'll be a new point of view in Israel. The view of Rav Moshe Feinstein, the chief rabbinate courts today, go by the view that if the parents are not Shomrei Shabbos, you can't convert the kids. Which basically takes that 400,000 group and leaves it that way. And we're saying, let's make a dent into it. With regard to the adults, don't have a solution. With regard to the kids, let's convert them. The chief rabbinate won't do it. Let's empower rabbis of cities to make their own courts, because then there'll be the availability to do it. We're not going to force the chief rabbinate to do anything they don't want to do, and they have absolute right to their opinion, and you see the opinions right here. But there are other opinions in Judaism, and we'd like to celebrate those other opinions. And I would say as follows, at least these kids are Jewish in the eyes of a Beis Din, a bona fide one, rabbi of a city. And I believe that at least we prevent intermarriage. Maybe you're not happy with the conversion. Maybe you don't think it's the best idea. But under these circumstances, at least you'll say afterwards, post facto, it is a conversion. And I'd just like to end with the following quote from Rav Chaim David Halevi. Rav Chaim David Halevi was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. Rav Chaim David Halevi happened to be, I get to him because his son-in-law was my Rosh Kollel. When I was learning for ordination, his son-in-law, Rav Shlomo Levi, was the Rosh Kollel in the yeshiva that I learned in. Rav Chaim David Halevi asked the following question in his responsum at the end of the source sheet. How come there's no mitzvah to convert sometimes and not? The night of the Seder, is there a mitzvah to eat matzah? Yeah. On Shavuos, is there a mitzvah to read the Kriya Satorah from Parshat Yitro about the Aseret HaDibrot and the Sinai experience? Yes. On Rosh Hashanah, there's a mitzvah to blow shofar during the day? Yes. How come there's no mitzvah to convert sometimes? Isn't that strange? We have all the laws of conversion. There's never anywhere where it says it's an obligation to convert. How come? How come he says there's throughout history batei din that were very machmir and batei din that are very mekel, lenient batei din, more stringent batei din? Says Rav Chaim David Halevi something amazing, and with this I'd like to conclude. That ultimately in Judaism, when it came to the laws of conversion, look at the bolded laws. Misura lechol dayanu manhig bedoro lahachlik kereut einav ben lekula uven lechumra. I translate. That unlike other laws, when it came to conversion, it's up to the dayanim from the Beis Din of that generation to make the determination. Do you go lenient or do you go stringent? Based on the tapestry, based on the reality. In the times of Ezra, during the Second Commonwealth in Israel, you all know there was a lot of intermarriage. So they went very much to the right, quote-unquote, saying, no conversions, don't intermarry, we're not going to convert anyone. And other times in history, they were very, very lenient, like Hillel in that famous story where someone said, teach me the whole Torah when I'm standing on one foot. And Hillel says, the most important law is, don't do to others what you don't like them to do to you, and he converted them. Says Rav Chaim David Halevi, each reality will redefine the mitzvah of converting. Does the reality warrant a more lenient point of view? Does the reality warrant a more stringent point of view? And it's up to the dayanim and the rabbis of that generation to determine that. And I conclude with this because I believe that right now in Israel we have an unprecedented situation. Unlike any time in history, we have many, many, many thousands of Israelis, 400,000 in number, that believe that they're as Jewish as their neighbors. And they're living in the Jewish country, albeit on paper they're not Jewish. That's an unprecedented situation because it's in Israel, albeit they're not Jewish. How do we respond? I think it's absolutely healthy that different batei din and different rabbis respond differently to that situation. But The conversion law on the table will say, let's have the different points of view available to people. Because I want to end with the following. Not every single person will convert, even if you're the most lenient based in. Many of them are offended that you're telling them they need to convert. They feel as Jewish as anyone else. But when you make it totally impossible, then the problem's just going to get bigger and bigger. When you make it a little possible, then we have a chance. We believe that with regard to the adults, we don't have a solution. With regard to kids, we do, based on what I said in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And I believe that if we empower rabbis of cities, that solution will be practical. It will be able to be done. And we can, yes, make a dent in two ways. We can convert these children, not to mention the fact that don't think for a moment we're just going to convert them. We're planning to have educational programming both before and after the conversion, so that it's not just a one-time event, but rather, beyond being in a Jewish country, and beyond whatever commitment we'll ask of the parents, they'll hopefully be able to say, Tamu ura'u ki tov Hashem. It's wonderful to be a Jew. It's actually amazing to be a Jew. It's actually a beautiful taste of having the ability to celebrate Judaism in a Jewish country. Thank you all very much. I know it's time for Mincha. Thank you.